morning, Your Honor. My name is Larry Bonka. I'm from the People's California, and I represent the plaintiff and the appellate, John Quinn. The focus of my remarks today will be on the issue of, first of all, I think the lower court find that it was a prima facie case of discrimination, so I don't think I need to address that unless there are questions about it. But then there was the issue became, in my mind, number one, how the lower court dealt with the factual issues that were presented to it. And most alarming to me in that decision was how the lower court dealt with the statements that were made to my client after he had been told. By the way, my client worked for, this is the only job he's ever had. He started at age 16, I think, as a box boy, and then worked his way up through the company and remains there to this day. It's the only job I've probably ever had.
Let me ask you this. Essentially, four people get selected, correct? And obviously what Raley's is saying, that the candidates who were promoted had more management and customer service experience than Mr. O'Quinn. And they had either distinguished themselves either in customer service or commitment to the company. Does the fact that Mr. O'Quinn said that he would only work in one of the stores, how does that factor into this? Because obviously three of the four people were in other stores, correct? So, I mean, did he essentially take himself out of qualification for those positions? But, I mean, I guess, can he complain about the other three jobs that he didn't get if he said, I don't want those jobs?
Well, there was a job in Chico, a couple of jobs in Chico, and a job in Oroville, and one in Marysville, I recall.
But he would only take one of those, right?
He would only take the Oroville job, and all of the other three stores hired people from within their store. This was the only one that hired somebody from outside the store. In fact, he was told early on that they would have an internal procedure to hire a customer service manager. And when he became the most qualified, that's when they opened up the applicants to people outside the store, which is one of the arguments that we have that shows pretext on the part of the Raiders. Because if they would have hired him within the store, there's no question that he was the most qualified person in the store.
Well, on all the four, but they all went with a CSM or what customer service manager. The job spec for that, did it say that people would be hired from in the store at all four of those, or where?
Well, this is where Ray's doesn't seem to have a consistent policy because, as you know from the record, Mr. O'Quinn was told early on that he might be Ray's first black manager, and then he proceeded to do all the things that he did, including taking the manager's exam and passing that, which was what he considered to be an objective measure of his talent. And then Rady's began promoting people without any exam or without any competition. In fact, in one case, an employee had been suspended for theft.
Well, but okay, but we have to deal with the customer service first, right? I mean, were any of the other four people that got selected, is there something in the record that they had also been disciplined, or is the record silent on that?
There's no indication that they have been.
Okay. And there is indication in the record that Mr. O'Quinn has been, correct? Well, I'm just talking about the record. I just want to know what's in the record.
Yes, but I don't know that that was I think that was more a convenient recitation by defense. The defense, once the case came, I don't know that that was a part of the decision.
Okay. And they started with, was it 14 or 14, 13 people on the list, something along those lines? And Mr. O'Quinn came out, I think, second to last. He wasn't last, correct, in that process. And then they selected four people, and he said he would only go to Oroville. And the person that – so give me your best argument on – I think that you've got the prima facie case, then they say what their reasons were. So I'm really focusing on the pretext. Give me your best argument on what the record shows in terms of what you presented in terms of to show that what was false about their reasons and pretext.
What was false, and what was to
show that it was discriminatory?
What was false about the reasons was that the company, first of all, switched the manner in which they were going to promote the CSM. First, they said they were going to promote it from within the store. They changed that when Mr. O'Quinn showed to be the most prominent candidate for that. They sent out a letter saying, we are now going to expand the search for the CSM.
Well, but at first he didn't even qualify, right? The first one they advertised, he didn't even qualify because you had to be a supervisor, right? I mean, as head clerk or what?
He wasn't head clerk.
But did he, when the first requirement that was shown, did he qualify to apply?
He was a head clerk. This is the interesting part about Mr. O'Quinn's career. He was promoted. He was a head clerk. Then there was an argument erupted as to his status, and he was continued as a head clerk, but he didn't have the function of a head clerk. He got pay, he got status, but he just wasn't fulfilling all of the duties of a head clerk, which is kind of an ironic way to deal with someone. They can, why isn't he promoted?
Well, see, I thought at first he didn't qualify under what the job spec said, and then they added, and then he did qualify by his experience, and I think also one of the other people that was selected that was some sort of manager I think it was Elvia Martinez wouldn't have originally qualified, but then when they changed whatever the requirements, she was not a head clerk, but was a second assistant drug center manager. Greg Arnovic was a head clerk. Mitch Clark was a head clerk. And Robin Montgomery was a head clerk.
Let me finish answering your question, because I also think the fact that the manner in which the panel was set up didn't seem to be of any benefit to Mr. O'Quinn's campaign on the first black manager raised, because they were all internal people who were Caucasian, who were going to decide whether or not he was going to be the first black manager. And they were all raised, they were allegiant to raised, and Mr. O'Quinn is a rather bold-looking man.
Well, they don't have to. I mean, obviously, they don't have to set up a procedure that ensures that Mr. O'Quinn will be the first black manager of Raley's. That doesn't sound like that would be a very good employment. If you know, I mean, that seems contrary to what you. If they set up any procedure that is set to select a particular person, that seems to be problematic from a human resources standpoint. Well, he obviously was qualified enough to get in that, but you have to show in the pretext that the reason that he didn't get it was, I mean, they said more qualified people got it than he was. And they said the reasons were either in the customer service area and in the current, most recent supervisorial experience. And he hadn't been a super, he sort of went in and out of supervision either by his choice or by other people's choices.
And the fact that they said that doesn't necessarily...
Then you have to go to pretext. Then you have to go to pretext.
Right, and the fact that Mr. McQuinn testified that he has done all these things and that he is capable of doing all these things and he can fit in to that reference I made to you on the standards for the customer service. The fact that Brady says he... The fact that the panel says he isn't qualified doesn't mean... He isn't qualified. It just creates a tension between what he says his qualifications are and what they say his qualifications are. So that's why I can't understand why we're here when we should be trying that issue before a jury, because Mr. O'Quinn did so many things. And had, he was produce manager. He worked as a head clerk. He's worked as a cashier. He's done every job in the store. In fact, Joe Henry told him, I didn't realize that you've done everything in this store. So the issue of whether or not he was qualified, and he was qualified, is an issue of fact that should be tried in this case and not decided on summary judgment. Because in reviewing all of the manner that the district judge approached this case, it looked to me like he was construing everything that presented against him.
Okay, he has to show the real reason he didn't get it was because he was black. Okay, right? That's part of the pretext, right?
He doesn't have to show that directly. He can show that.
All right, and you put in evidence certain comments that had been made over his 30-year career that were of a racial nature. How do we link those to the selection committee?
Fragments itself and says the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. And I don't think they can have it both ways. If they're going to be treated as an individual, they have to be regarded as an individual. When a manager says to a black employee who was supposed to be...
Okay, well, I don't say that that can't occur, but I think that if you take it to the extreme, let's say someone made a racial remark in a 30-year period that was not sanctioned, you know, that there's no showing that it has anything to do with the decision-making process. Are you saying just because someone, not the decision-maker, in a huge corporation makes a racial comment, that's enough to show pretext? That meets your burden of persuasion on pretext for summary judgment purposes. Okay, but that, all right, now I'm not saying that doesn't have relevance, but that wasn't for the CSM position. That was before, correct?
That was for a manager position. There are three manager positions. They renamed it now, and they call them store director.
All right, but the job he's challenging that he didn't get is CSM. And so for pretext, if he shows that other statements were made, he's got to show that to have some sort of causal link to the present position, correct?
Or inferences that,
right.
that was the basis why he didn't get the job. And the background testimony that he gave and the surveillance room among I was concerned about the district court's statement in its decision regarding the what if a customer came in and called you a nigger, and the district court didn't regard that as a racist statement and made some remark that it maybe was a good question to ask. I found that troubling because
I found a lot of things troubling about the district court judge's decision. He says O'Quinn has had, at best, a lackluster career. Why is the district court judge making findings of fact at summary judgment?
That's exactly what I was saying. He did a lot of that. Apparently, he didn't think that O'Quinn had had a good career.
He said he had an unremarkable career.
You have about 3 minutes left. Do you want to save it for rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, well, they do batch cases, and if you're later on the calendar, sometimes you want to get up and object to something that somebody said in the first part of the calendar.
To put it in context for your work this morning, the first case, there was an argument about this morning, was an argument that the selection criteria had been manipulated. In the second case, there was an argument that were gender-based discriminatory remarks by the decision maker. Okay, and in this case, we have neither of circumstances like that. We have a very clean, pure selection criteria, and I'll get into that in a second. And moreover, we have no record whatsoever that the decision makers had any sort of discriminatory animus. And then there's another third critical fact, I think, that distinguishes the first and second cases that you're dealing with from this case, and that is, in those cases, the plaintiff was one of two or a small group of people. In the first case, it sounded like there were two people that were being passed on. And this person, the plaintiff in that case, initially met the one of two people criteria, and then the scores were changed by points and so forth, and he was pulled from that and not passed on to the second selection test. In the second case, it sounded like it was a man and a woman, and the decision maker wanted to win. In this case, there were 13 applicants. John O'Quinn ranked last on the selection panel of three of the five panelists, ranked in last. If you did a cross average, I think Judge Callahan, you're right, I think he was 12 out of 13. The highest he received was from Andrew Warville, the person that asked John O'Quinn to apply for the position. Mike Massa ranked him 6 out of 13. Joanne Hickory, who was the human resources professional on the five-person selection panel, rated him 7. Interesting. One of the reasons, and it's in Ms. Pinkery's declaration, one of the reasons that Mr. O'Quinn ranked higher on her panel than some of the others was because some of the panelists didn't want to move. Okay, and so Ms. Pinkery, that was a relevant fact, and whether you'd be considered for other stores, and quite a few of the applicants had taken the position that Mr. O'Quinn took, that no, I want to stay at the particular store. Let me take a backdrop. So I think this case is, to me, based on what I heard, and I don't have the records, it seems like an easier case than the case.
Now you're going to get some people objecting from the audience who stuck around.
one of the facts, I think the selection criteria is important. And one of the facts that Mr. Baumbach has presented to you this morning was that that initially his client was told that someone would be hired from the Oroville store for the customer service management position. Okay, that's the representation Mr. Feinbach made. That is not reflected in the record. All right, the undisputed fact by Raley is fact 24 cites the deposition testimony of Mr. O'Quinn and cites the affidavit declaration from Joanne Hendry. And this, what Raley was doing was introducing a new position into 60 of the stores, the customer service manager position, would be a front-end face to the store. The top two ranking positions in the stores are the store director and the assistant store director. And they're doing, while they're the leaders of the store, they're doing backroom management issues, personnel issues, third-party vendor relationship issues, dealing with corporate offices and so forth. What Raley wanted to do in establishing the customer service manager position, and this is in the record and undisputed facts number 9 from Raley, is put a face on the store to say to our customers in this world of big box competition, we Raley put the customer first. So we're going to have a person there that isn't being pulled by all of the other business of the store, a person dedicated solely and principally to the customers. Okay? And they set up a very clear criteria. They did this at 60 stores in Northern California. And then what they did was they said, okay, let's have a neutral selection criteria. They came up with a very specific list of criteria. The biggest of the three most important, management engineering, front-end experience, and I'm using that short term for being able to handle the cashier duties, coupons, specials, and all the other varieties of things that go with front-end, releasing courtesy clerks to the parking lot, making sure spills are cleaned up. Okay. And then the third, of course, and these are all related, is some customer relationship experience. All right, somebody that shows you that some talent and skill with customers. Those were very specific three criteria. They set those out and they posted it company-wide. All right? And Judge Callahan, you're right initially that the pool, and this is for company-wide, the pool was for head clerks. It said, let's promote from head clerks. There was never any evidence in the record, because it's not true, that they were going to hire from within individual stores. Okay? People were invited and they could apply throughout the chain. And then later it was broken down into clusters. And there was a cluster in the Central Valley of four stores, Tuba Chico, Yuma City, and Mr. O'Quinn's store, which is Oroville. Okay. All right. So they had the selection panel. Then
Did Mr. O'Quinn qualify for the first?
He did not qualify. And this is another point. Mr. Baumbach represented the court that Mr. O'Quinn was a head clerk. There is a nuance to that fact. And the nuance is that in 1996, Mr. O'Quinn was demoted from head clerk after serving there for a six-month period, demoted from head clerk to journeyman clerk. And out of the kindness of the heart of the person that was the store manager, and this being in the record, he was not demoted in title nor in pay. But he admits, Mr. O'Quinn admits in the record, that his duties were gutted and he no longer served as the head clerk on the night shift. But rather, he returned to a journeyman clerk. Now, this happened earlier in his career in a slightly different manner. He had been a head clerk from 1985 to 1989, and in 1989, he stepped down voluntarily.
I guess arguably it could be disputed whether he was head clerk only in title or in duties or whatever, but does that really matter here since he qualified to apply for the job?
I don't think it does matter in the sense that he has to prove pretext and he has to prove that he was qualified. He has to build a strong enough case to establish a discriminatory inference. And if you don't meet the initial...
But you're not saying he didn't meet his initial burden.
We did argue that in the lower court.
All right. Are you still arguing that?
Yes, I'm still reassuming that argument. I don't think he's got a prima facie case, but more to the point, if he does have a prima facie case, that he met the initial qualification, and Judge England said, listen, you interviewed him, you know, Raley, therefore you admit that he was qualified because he left an interview.
It's a pretty hard argument to make that he doesn't satisfy his prima facie case.
And I don't want to use much of my 20 minutes before the three distinguished judges. It's not our strongest argument to make the argument, to make that case. But I think the relevance of it, Your Honor, is that his prima facie case was so weak that he can't rely. If you look at what the Ninth Circuit set out after Reeves in the Chain case, they said, listen, if you're going to be pretext, you can rely on your evidence that you have a prima facie case. In Chain, there was a UC Davis professor that was so incredibly qualified, okay, and he had published articles and so forth, and he established a prima facie case, and he came back, and the university said, we've got a legitimate reason for not hiring you and so forth. And what he did on summary judgment, he came back and said, but I'm so incredibly qualified. In other words, he didn't submit any new evidence. And the Ninth Circuit said, okay, in that situation, you can rely on your prima facie case. Well, here, what's Mr. O'Quinn's prima facie case? He barely, if at all, and we would contend that he doesn't, but...
But let's say if we get over to pretext, I mean, there were, over his 30-year career, there were, you know, he did present evidence of racial animus, as it were. What, you know, why would you say that those don't satisfy his showing that of pretext here?
The reason I would say that is, first of all, look at the time of them, okay? All of the evidence that he presented was dated. His principal claim, and Mr. Wambach mentioned that he'd be the first black manager, was a statement from the late 1970s when Mr. O'Quinn was a relatively new employee, made by people that were entirely not even in the company anymore. There's no record that they were not involved in the second panel. Remarks that he attributes to Bob George, who was the store manager at the Oracle store. Mr. O'Quinn admits on the record that he left Bob George last managed him in 1994. Well, we're talking about the CSM position in September of 2001. Moreover, Your Honor.
Well, I think he's trying to state his best argument is that this is, it sort of shows, there's an inference that shows that's Raley's position relative to management promotions.
Those facts would be in a case would be more relevant if Mr. O'Quinn had a record that qualified him for the CSN position. What happened with the CSN position was facts 50 through 54 in Raley's separate statement were undisputed about the qualifications and Raley's opinion about four candidates in the university that were selected. And Mr. O'Quinn, meanwhile, concedes in his deposition on pages 154 through 160, 228 through 235, and up to 238, that his experience at the front end with managing employees and with relationships with customers was sparse at best. And so if you take these
So if you're saying if he were more qualified, the persuasiveness and pretext would be slightly different?
I think that the stray remarks in the past would have more relevancy and more kick if he had been ranked 12 out of 13. And we haven't even gotten to the most compelling fact regarding this failure to be selected.
Right, but I think part of the argument is that was why he was ranked 12 out of 13. I mean, and I understand that there's a subjective, I mean, an objective component to that, too, but his argument is, yes, that's why it was ranked so lowly.
Yeah, and right now, all that is an argument, because he hasn't linked any of those remarks to the panelists. And when you have a straight remarks, that has to be hooked to the decision-maker, okay? And if he feels like he's been discriminated in the past and denied promotion, well, that is an actionable claim that should have been brought within the statute of limitations. If we're talking about an entirely different selection.
No, I understand.
And really, what we're dealing with here is if anybody can go back and say, okay, we've got a new job that's open. They've posted it. They've invited multiple applicants. They've given clear criteria that Mr. O'Quinn doesn't dispute is relevant to the CSM position. And then the person comes in, interviews, ranks 12 out of 13. Can they bring a claim and get a case in front of the jury? If they bring a history in of other people that said derogatory remarks to them over a 30-year career, and it just seems to me that this is a classic case where the court has properly held that you've got to produce under the Godwin case law and Chang, you've got to produce specific and substantial evidence to rebut the pretext to show that the reason that you selected was untrue, false, changing, not worthy of credence, and that plus it was related somehow to discrimination. And Mr. O'Quinn testified that he didn't have much experience. And Mr. Bombach said moments ago that Mr. O'Quinn had been a checker. I mean, that's astounding, that representation is astounding. Mr. O'Quinn said in his deposition, first of all, he on his resume for the job, he never was a checker as a job that he had in his 30 years. And then he did, when I asked him his deposition, he said, I stepped in once for 30 minutes in the past 12 years as a checker. So he didn't have the experience. And that's kind of where the case comes down. So when you look at these remarks, they don't add up a whole lot when you can't deal with a neutral process with decision makers that have no bias and so forth. I mean, it just isn't a case where, like you said, a case where somebody who's making these stray remarks directly about this candidate contemporaneously or closer in time.
You said that Mr. O'Quinn was still employed at rallies. You tried to settle this dispute? Have you tried to settle this? Well, he's employed by rallies today, correct? Is that right?
Yeah, he is employed by rallies. The honest answer to that question is.
So apparently you have a dedicated employee. Correct? So why wouldn't you want to try and resolve this dispute so everybody can get along and continue on in their good graces?
I appreciate the question. The honest answer is I'm not aware that we've ever had meaningful settlement discussions. I would respectfully argue that in the case of litigation, that's not a factor that court should be.
No, I'm just curious. No,
we often ask sometimes at this juncture because the circuit mediator has had a lot of success, and I can assure you we don't take it one way or the other on the merits of the case. That's completely independent. But often we inquire just to see if that's a possibility.
I mean, it's the kind of case you should be able to resolve. I mean, he's there. He's been a long-time employee.
Your Honor,
a little mediation might go a long way.
Since we're being candid, and I think Mr. Bombach would share this and he'll get a minute to respond. Mr. O'Quinn is a strong personality.
No, you don't have to tell me. I'm just curious. Yeah. That's all.
I think if you saw the background and the context of the case, we can fill that in.
Well, you've concluded.
Well, I don't think that, obviously from the standpoint that I don't see that really has any relevance to the summary judgment evidence. I mean, that's what we're considering here. Dressing.
the Oracle store, and then went on to say, I want this employment contract if you're going to take me outside the union, because the other stores were non-union. And Rayleigh's, Pendry, and some of the other panelists said, listen, we're looking for people that are committed and aren't worried about whether it's a union, non-union, or any of that. We want a straight commitment. And to suggest in an interview for this customer service position, you're going to negotiate your own individual employment contract, is what's startling. And so that's a fact that's undisputed. And Mr. O'Flynn admits that he became angry at the question during the course of the interviews.
I think we have your argument in hand, so thank you very much.
Thank you. I understand Mr. O'Quinn's expressions of frustration after committing 30 years of his life to a single employer and then being suggested that in order to get promoted, he'd have to abandon his union position, which he considered to be a security he had there in the whole hometown.
Well, but is there anything that the other people were being treated differently on that?
Well, a couple of the other people said they wouldn't move out.
No. I mean, was there any indication that other people would get anything other than a non-union job if they went there? I mean, that's neutral, isn't it? Anyone that applied for those positions was going to be in a non-union.
Well, I don't know.
It wasn't just Mr. O'Quinn, was it?
I don't know how many people who applied for the job were in the union to begin with. I think Mr. O'Quinn was the only one from the Oracle store, which is a union store. The rest of them aren't. So the people from outside the store who were interviewing for the jobs.
Well, I just don't see how that can be different. That can factor into why he might not want to work there, but I don't see how you can put that negatively on Rayleigh's when anyone that went to any of those other stores was going to be in a non-union position.
I'm just trying to explain Mr. Quinn's point of view. When he would be asked to do something like that, they should criticize him for not wanting to leave his home store. Council talked about the use of clean, pure selection criteria and compared it with the first case that you heard today where they brought people from all over the place not affiliated with particular district and had them do the evaluation. That's not the case here. This is not a complete clean, pure selection criteria. These are people within the store who Mr. Quinn knew who are going to be judging whether or not he should be promoted.
What's the best evidence you have in the record that there is a nexus between the discriminatory comments made to him and the selection panel?
The nexus between the discriminatory...
Right. I mean, there are cases, of course, where you have a decision maker who has made discriminatory comments, and that's the best nexus. But what do you have? What's your best evidence in the record at this juncture of a nexus between the people who made the selection and the discriminatory comments that you put in as evidence of pretext? Yes, please.
The legal prohibition against racial discrimination drives racial discrimination further underground. The closer the racist policy gets to actually implementing its attitudes, the harder it is for us to discern what it's about. And I think a fact finder in this case would be enormously helpful to sitting down and judging the demeanor of the various people who were involved in Mr. O'Quinn's life, perhaps during their entire careers with the Rady store. So I really felt that the nexus problem is by inference only, and there is no direct evidence to whether there was a nexus, but I think that is such a subtle issue and so difficult that it shouldn't be decided on paper, but should be decided by having real human beings testify in a courtroom so they can be evaluated by a trier of fact.
Thank you, counsel. The case just heard will be submitted. And we'll proceed to the final case on the argument calendar, Thaler v. Harris Operating.